It's been just over a year since I've been sworn in as the 41st governor of Nebraska. And I just tell you, whenever I try to talk about it, I get goosebumps, and it's just an extraordinary privilege to be your governor. If it ever somebody says, is it normal yet? And I say, if it ever gets normal, I need to get the heck out of Dodge, because it's an incredible privilege. And working very, very hard, to be governor of all Nebraska. And God forbid that we would agree on everything. But as your governor, you know, we've been zeroed in on four words. And you'll keep hearing it over and over and over again. It's about kids. It's about taxes, getting us competitive. It's about agriculture. We defend, grow, and sell agriculture all over the world, and then standing up for our values. And, you know, a couple things. My dad would always say, if you got to talk about something, you do that. That's bragging, and nobody wants to listen to any of that. I think what is really, really important in the past year, one of the words that we've used, and I want to make sure I recognize, could not have ever had this happen. It was just over 3 years ago. It was January 8th, 3 years ago, this calling happened. And I didn't even tell my wife. In the back of my brain, I just said, for this to happen, I'm going to pray like heck that a good friend of mine, since we were 18 years of age, would have flexibility to consider. So I want to introduce Lieutenant Governor Joe Kelly, originally from Lexington. And there's no way possible, Joe and I are extraordinary partners. Don't have to worry about any, you know, we see the world, and there's so many things that I have zero capacity on that Joe has. Joe spent his life as a public servant, putting a lot of bad people away as a prosecutor, helps through that whole process, where gigantic learning curve for me as a, you know, a veterinarian, a pig farmer. I didn't ever deal in courts or any of those kinds of things. So we're a great team. And, you know, when Joe was able to say, yeah, he would be on it, I've been so far over my skis, the confidence level of having an incredible partner. The other thing I wanted to do before I started was introduce, when you build a team and in public service and people say yes, it's incredibly, incredibly humbling. And I want to recognize Rob Jeffries. Rob, if you would stand and be recognized, please. So most of us kind of are getting excited about football and recruiting and stuff. So Rob, I call him a five-star recruit. We were able to, he heads up our Department of Corrections. We spent time here this morning for an hour and a half. And Rob, we got Rob to come to Nebraska from Illinois. He was the director of corrections in Illinois. Think about this, Illinois. 29,000 inmates to Nebraska. We're about 5,500. Roughly 27, 28 different facilities. We have nine. And Rob Jeffries came to Nebraska. And guess why Rob Jeffries is in Nebraska? Because of the people in Nebraska. He's here because of all of us, that we don't play politics. We just treat each other with respect, and we do business, and we get things done. And we are in the midst. We have impressive work that's done here in McCook. And then we're embarking on the new prison out on Interstate 80 and Highway Interstate 80 and 56th Street North Central Lincoln. And here's what's exciting. Rob has done everything across the whole process of corrections, and with that new facility, we will have programming and a facility design. He's been a part of all that we will set the standard that driving down recidivism and making sure that every person has the tools and make a difference and get back into the workforce in Nebraska. We will be, with Rob's leadership and because of the people in Nebraska, we will be the leader in the country. we will be the model that people will be trying to replace. How's that happen? Only because of leadership. So because of the people in Nebraska, we were able to get a five-star like Rob here. So that part's really exciting. You know, maybe there's a couple things I thought that biggest challenge being your governor is figuring out when we make a decision, figuring out how to be able to reach everybody so that everybody understands. I'll just share a conversation that I had with a person who just called me a couple days ago in regard to the pandemic summer EBT funding of the $19 million. When you read that we said no to that, how many of you in here said, what on earth is wrong with Pillen? He doesn't care about Pillen, about kids, right? But here's so I had a person that we know each other really well. We have incredible respect for each other. We've done a lot of good things together, but we've not been afraid to disagree. And I think that's something that's really important, but we have a great relationship. And I think that's one thing. I think that's one thing in Nebraska that we all have to do a better job. Every one of us in here, we have to get comfortable being uncomfortable to disagree with each other. And the only way we can do that is if we really spend time having a relationship. Because if we have a great relationship, we can disagree. It's God forbid if we agreed on everything. But so many times, we just, you know, I'll say one here in the last, I don't know how many, month or two, I ran into a lady and we were talking about carbon pipeline. Well, yeah, I'm totally for it, but my neighbor across the way is vehemently opposed, so I can't be for it. Go, God, are you kidding me? So I think that it's really important that we can get comfortable being uncomfortable talking about issues that are really important. So if I can share with you why we said no to the $19 million for kids on the pandemic federal funding. And as I told the person that called me, he said, look, I'm just pleading with you to consider it. And he said, I'm not going to argue with you, Jim. I'm just pleading with you to change your mind and do it. And I said, okay. He said, because I believe that we don't get near our fair share of the federal dollars to the state of Nebraska. And for that reason alone, it's important, but also the kids. And I said, well, number one, I 100% agree. We as a state have done a lousy, lousy job getting our fair of federal dollars. And we are working very hard. We're putting a $2.5 million in with that I'll talk about tomorrow in the state of the state for funding for bioeconomy so we can attract and get a lot of federal dollars here. We rank number 49 out of 50 states in attracting federal dollars. While I'm your governor, we're going to put everything on to make sure that we get more than our fair share. So I said, I agree with that. And I said, okay, so I said, could I share what he says? I know that you gave a lot of critical thought. Can I share why I said no? And of course, and so here's the bottom line. Number one, the $19 million is three $40 checks a month to the parents of the kids. Okay, three $40 checks for 3 months in the summer. Now here's the facts that really touches us. So when we think about the pandemic, when this program was put in place, when we think about the pandemic and the impact of the pandemic on our kids, do you think the pandemic was good for our kids or bad for our kids? Bad for our kids, right? So what would you think that our Department of Health and Human Services, would you think that the calls for kids needing help would have increased or decreased during the pandemic? Increased, right? More kids in need. The fact is, it fell like a rock. The calls almost died to zero, not quite to zero, but they really dropped because the kids were not in school. The teachers are their advocates. The teachers are the advocates to call when kids need help. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so in the summertime, we have SNAP program. We have USDA program that's been going on since 1975. That are federal dollars that come, and then we, the state, administer with in partnership with educators and in partnership with nonprofits, where every kid is got nutritional meals taken care of. We spend over right at $30 million of federal dollars a month taking care of close to 200,000 people in Nebraska that are in need for food and so forth. But the biggest thing for the program in the summer is these kids need to be able to come and be engaged and have enrichment activities, exercise, that they need to be around, and that makes an incredible difference for them, if that makes sense. So we need the kids to be in environments, and we have great environments, whether it's in schools for the summer programs, it's at camps or in churches, to take care of it. And we're using all federal funds to do that. And so, as this person said, so the money, that $40 per month goes to the parents. I said, yes, goes to the parents. He goes, probably not much of it goes to the kids. Probably not much of it goes to the kids. And I have a personal story that I won't get into, but my view of what I experienced, taking my son to his bio mom for a number of years, not a dime gets there. And so made that decision with extraordinary depths of experience, clarity, and then when you know what really goes on. So I hope you have confidence in that decision. And as I say, if most of us in Nebraska could have access to, you know, we're just common sense. You know, I'm far from, you know, I'd be on the dull bulb side in this room, but I'm blessed with common sense. Common sense wins in Nebraska. Common sense, you do what's best, and giving money, hoping kids get fed just doesn't work in my book. So hopefully that makes sense. And then maybe the other one that I think we need to talk about a lot. I'm a believer. You know, I'm a team guy. I believe that work shouldn't be work. Work's a nasty four-letter word, right? And that if we care about each other and we're working together, we really can make each other better every day. And at work doesn't have to be work. But that's why I believe we need to have everybody working in person. And, you know, it's snagged up a little bit with the unions right now. But, you know, we're not going to give up on it and not going to back away, because without a shadow of a doubt, and there's an exception to every rule, but there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Almost all of us, whatever we're in business or whatever we're doing, we're going to be able to perform and do better if we're working together and if we're working and collaborating and then know how much we care about each other. And that's really, really hard. Really hard to do if we're doing it at home. And we talk about this all the time, and hopefully this might be of value to you. I learned this about 25 years ago, as I say, from a very, very high academic setting called a Mormon's feed salesman. Mormon's feed salesman, right? So Mormon, the old days, Mormon's feed salesman had to negotiate and trade with farmers, and you know, you learn that you got to get pretty good at that, Jason, right? And yep. So this is his communication is 7-38-55. 7-38-55. 7% of communication are the words we use. 38% is how we say it, and then 55% is our body language. Now, I believe that with every cell in my body. And just think about it. You know, we do way too much communicating via text or email. Try it. If you're the last 10 texts, call and ask people what they interpreted, what you meant. And I'll bet you're going to be off half the time. And so my point simply is that we have extraordinary opportunities to make incredible improvement. And that's our goal at state government. We are, I'm a fiscal conservative, and we will present our biennium excuse me, budget tomorrow, and I'll just touch on a couple high points. But we are working very, very hard at improving processes. treating state government just like a business, which means we do more with less. We're working on improving processes and decreasing spending. Don't fall out of your chairs. We're decreasing spending and we're improving our services. So we'll decrease our spending in the first half of this biennium, like 1.6%, not from budget, from what we actually spent. What we actually spent. So in the first biennium, we will be 3% under. In the second, we will be 6% under what we actually spent. And we're putting our money where our mouth is and just simply working on simple things. The key to it is that we all got to be together. We all have to work together. And then we all give the benefit of the doubt of each other and keep getting better. So those are a couple of things that I think are really, really important. I will tell you, I've been asked, how are you doing? How are you doing in this politics? And I said, I'm doing great. I don't do it, right? I don't do it. I just treat it like business. We just keep moving forward. And I've learned this. I'm keeping my life really, really simple for a period of time. And I'm not going to say I never get overwhelmed yet, but I do. But for a period of time, you'd look at the schedule, and that's been the heart of this schedule's a lot. What I've learned is if I just focus on today, I can do anything today. So my life, I look at it pretty simple. I pray it in the morning. I pray to do God's will. I look in the mirror and I say, I believe. Yeah. If we don't believe in ourselves, who the heck is going to? I believe. And number two, I'm going to be 100% positive. I'm going to be 100% positive. I don't care who wants to poke me in the eye. It doesn't matter. Who wants to vote against me? We're going to win them over tomorrow. And then thirdly, we're going to work harder than anybody else. And that's my commitment to you as your governor. If something goes astray there, I'm not your governor. You can be rest assured. And just 100% focus on what's best for Nebraska. You know how many polls we've done in year one? Zero. We're out amongst the people. We know what everybody's thinking. I think in 23, what was the number? We had like 475 public events that I spoke at in the year of 2023, and that doesn't count all the private engagements and so forth. So we're working very hard to change how we do business at the state level, but then being engaged with the people. So wanted to make sure I had a chance to explain myself on the summer EBT program and then on getting people back to work. And if people don't want to come back to work, it's okay. It's okay. They just can't be on our team anymore. That's all. It doesn't make anybody bad or good. Back in the business world, I always just called it a happy talk, right? If we're not happy what we're doing, we got about 60 seconds to have an attitudinal change, or it's time to go do something different. And that's not being, it's just how we have to do it. And it's more critical as a public servant. So maybe the other thing I thought I would just touch base on in terms of our resources at the state. As I said, a year ago when we became your governor, in 2022, there was historic revenue. It increased like 22%, and it all was it all came about because of the extraordinary money the federal government printed. When we started going through transition, every state agency was coming in with when any of us have come across more money than we thought we'd ever have, what do we tend to do with it? Spend it, right? I mean, we'll put some away, but it happened. It's in government as well. So a year ago, before Joe and I were sworn in, going through all the transition, we had 5% increase requests, 10%, 15% increase requests, and there's a whole lot of things that would have really, really been nice, but as I say, not needed. And so I'm old enough, I'd still say I'm only 48, but I'm old enough to remember the last time the government printed money in the 70s with Jimmy Carter. And as I say, the people who thought that was going to go on and kept spending, what happened to them? They all went broke, some jumped off of stuff. And the people that were fiscally conservative tightened their belts. Everybody in this room thrived and did well. And so we came in all this money. So our goal was to have a zero budget increase. Nebraska State Patrol, which I call the flagship of keeping us safe, was way behind on being paid. We believe we needed to correct that. So in the end, we presented a budget of 1.7% increase, working with the unicameral, partnering with everybody in the unicameral. Not enemies or partners, we're working to do the people, separation of powers, but we're partnering with the unicameral. So we are at 2%. And I guess what I just would encourage us everywhere, city of McCook, the county of McCook, say we got to start saying no. We got to start saying no in terms of spending our money. And let's just focus on what we really, really need, because our tax policy still is not competitive. So what we've been able to do and what we'll talk about, we've been able to decrease our spending. And then the other is that we've gone through and we found extraordinary amounts of money. So we made the investment of $1 billion in the Education Future Fund, and increased funding of K-12 education so that every school that's not in the TEOSA formula would get $1,500 of foundation aid, and then, of course, much-needed funding for special education. I think those are things across the state that are everybody in that space is very, very grateful for. The other thing was getting community colleges off the property tax payroll. That's roughly just under $250 million of property tax savings, and which will enhance us to strengthen. We have solid community colleges, but you know, as I tell Ryan Purdy at North Platte, you know, we gotta start figuring out how to double shift our electrical classes, our welding classes, our diesel, because we have so many kids we need to get into trade schools to develop skill sets so we can lift kids up out of poverty and have thriving middle class. So I think that maybe where I'm trying to go with that is our highest fiscal conservative keeps saying no and stop spending. As long as I'm your governor, we will be shrinking state government. We will be spending less each year, not more. If we can't do that, I won't be your governor. It's just that simple. Not you know, that's what we're our highest priority. The second, so then we are also able to make good inroads on Social Security. I don't know how many of you woke up one day and realized your Social Security income is taxed. Are you kidding me? So that ends this year, and then we are able to decrease income tax to get competitive with Iowa, where we'll be 3.99% by 2027. So those are all things that we were able to get done this last session. Obviously, property tax. Is there anybody in the room happy with what you pay for your property tax?
Not at all.
Right? So we've had a working group. We started with, we started having meetings back in July. And just so you know, I don't live in a tunnel. I'm a collaborator, and we learned from everybody. We started it. That's how we came up with the Education Future Fund and knew what we needed to do there by starting back a year ago last December in transition to figure out what we really needed to do with funding and working with educators and stakeholders. We've done the same for the valuation property tax. So we're putting forth in this group. So here's a couple numbers that are really easy to remember and important to remember, and we need your help. So the state of Nebraska, we paid roughly a little over $5 billion last year in property tax. $5 billion. It's gone up. Our property taxes in the last 6 years has gone up $1.3 billion. And so this working group said, we have to not only just stop it from going up, we have to cut it significantly. And we all came away with a consensus that we're going to cut property taxes 40%. That we're going to get our property taxes from $5 billion down to $3 billion. From 5 to 3. And it's going to happen by a couple ways. First, the 250 that's already been done, that counts because we paid that in 23. So the 250. And then altogether of the past property tax credits, those would add up somewhere around $750 million. Those are going to not require, we're going to get legislation not to require those to go to accountants, not do the rebate, that those all get front loaded. Does that make sense? They all get front loaded, so we're not writing that check and hoping we get it back. And incidentally, 34 or 5 years in, 30% of Nebraskans have never gone and got it, so that'd be like $125 million that we, the state, or we, our communities just kept, not Nebraska. So that would get the other proposal that gets front loaded, and then we need to find $1 billion. The other piece that's really, really important is stopping spending, and Senator Lynn and we are working together to have a hard cap on county and municipality spending. Hard cap, so that we don't wake up in 6 years with another $1.3 billion. Where that, I'm a hard cap zero, you know, that's who I am. Where that ends up, I'm not 100%, but I'm a believer that I want to look everybody in the eye, because the biggest issue on property taxes is we have countless folks who have worked their lifetime here. It's affecting everybody, and most, it's affecting every homeowner. We have countless people that have raised their families, educated their children here, retire, and now they're waking up and they can't afford the home they've lived in because of property taxes. So I'm putting my stake in the star of the Dallas Cowboys and saying we are going to fix it. I'm challenging the Unicameral. We're going to partner and get to 40%, a 40% reduction to get to $3 billion. We are halfway there, but we have to get another billion, and we have to come up with ways. We have to go through some people are going to attack it and call it a tax increase. That's hogwash. It's not a tax increase, for crying out loud. If everybody would understand renewable fuels policy, right? This area won big time. The state of Nebraska won big time because of renewable fuels policy. So President Bush signed that into law January 2 of 07, State of the Union. I remember it like it was yesterday, because I kept kicking myself saying, why didn't I buy more farm ground? You know, how did we not understand just how significant 5 billion new bushels of corn would have an impact? State of Nebraska won big time, and so what happened from that is it was politically favorable. And oh, by that way, the other problem in that time frame after the Obama recession, we were in a deflationary period of time for almost 10 years. Just go check the data. Every city, county, and state government grew by 5 and 6%. So those sins are eating away at us, and we have to be bold and courageous and fix them now. That's my view. And so we're going to get 40% reduction. Excuse me. And it's really important that we work together, and we need your help with engagement with folks in the Unicameral, because it's a tax shift, and the only solution is either in that time frame it was politically favorable to take a bunch of sales tax exemptions off, so we have to expand the base back to correct it, because it's been going on for 20 years plus. Sales tax. Today we have a 5.5% sales tax on items that none of us need. Okay, there's no item on there that's a sales tax that is essential. They're, I guess the fancy word is discretionary. I call them, they're items that aren't needed. If we would increase that 1%, that gets us real close to $500 million. And then of that 500, $60 million is to our roads. And that's the other thing that's important for us to recognize. the inflation in roads construction is rampant. We all agree we got to have roads. So those are a couple things that with the shift would make a difference. If we increased our sales tax 2%, we would go from being the fourth highest property tax, we'd be down to like number 30 or 35, somewhere in there. Our sales tax would increase and put us like number 9 or 10. Another item is cigarettes. I only know how to say it the way it is. We're right now today in taxing cigarettes, we rank number 42. We tax 62 cents. If we increase that $2 to 262, we would rank number 13. And, you know, I watched my dad die because of cigarettes. I hope it changes behavior. It generates $120 million of property tax relief. And those are the things that I believe we need to have the courage to do what we believe is right. If some of you smoke, I don't begrudge it. It's just, I'd like to change your behavior and fix property tax problems. So those are things that are that we're working very, very hard on with the unicameral. I'm not going to give up. When you get into the lobbying piece, that's fascinating. Everybody's for 40% property tax relief. Everybody wants their coffee can not to be touched. And I think the other message just simply is we attitudinally, right? What's more important to us, McCook or Nebraska? What do you say? What's more important to us, McCook or Nebraska?
McCook.
So when I'm in Omaha, I'm not smart enough to ask different questions. So when I'm in Omaha and ask, what's more important to you, Omaha or Nebraska? What do you hope they say in Omaha? What would you like them to say?
Nebraska,
right? So what's different? And believe it or not, most everybody in Omaha gets it. The only way Omaha is going to be vibrant is if McCook's kicking tail. And so my point simply is it's really, really important that all of us going forward, we're attitudinally, what's in best for Nebraska? That might mean we take a nick. I don't think, I could be wrong, but there's no, are there private schools here? No.
Yes.
One.
K-8.
Say it again?
K-8.
Yep, okay. So in some counties where there's not one private school, you know, I'll talk about opportunity scholarships till the cows come home. I believe the communication of it should have been vastly different. And as we've talked about, the one thing we all agree our kids are our future, and we never ever give up on a kid. And my home is Columbus. We have a bunch of private schools. So here's the misleading. I hope everybody in here is a great advocate of public schools. But in this conversation, do you think everything's perfect in a private school?
No way.
Kids are in private schools, and guess what? Wake up and it's not the right fit for them. And guess where they go? They go to a public school. So all opportunity scholarships is a tax credit off the top of $6.5 billion of revenue from the state, $25 million tax credit to help kids in poverty, help kids in foster care, help kids of veterans, that if they're in a public school and it's not the right fit, that they can go to that school, so they can go to another school. That's it. And I think, bottom line, when we talk about it in areas that don't have a private school, people go, well, I didn't understand it like that. Even though I don't have a private school in my county, I'm for that. That's what's best for Nebraska. So no kid falls behind. So those are things that I think are really, really important for Nebraska, that we attitudinally, obviously, don't mistake, we have to do great stuff for McCook. But there, if every single policy is exclusively in the best interest of McCook, we probably are going to have a problem.